from KQED.
Coming up in Forums next hour, in our first half hour, Bay Area-based novelist Martin Cruz Smith, the author of Gorky Park and Stalin's Ghost, as well as a number of other novels featuring Russian detective Arkady Renko, will join us. He's recently published a new Renko novel, Tatiana, a suspense thriller loosely based on the real-life story of a Russian journalist. And we'll also talk with him about his recent revelation that he has Parkinson's disease. At 10:30, veteran Pacifica broadcaster and journalist Larry Bensky, who heads up Radio Proust's website, will join us to talk about Marcel Proust's Swan's Way, the first volume of In Search of Lost Time, published a century ago this coming Thursday. Join us for Forum. It's up next after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to another hour of the Forum program. Life is a series of murders, lies, and corruption for hard-boiled Russian detective Arkady Renko. And Renko is the brainchild of Bay Area-based best-selling crime novelist Martin Cruz Smith and the star of a series of Russia-based books, starting with the bestseller Gorky Park in 1981. In the eighth book of the series, Tatiana, the detective investigates the murder of a Russian journalist. And Martin Cruz Smith joins us for this opening segment of Forum's program, and he prefers being called Bill. And Bill, it's good to have you back on Forum. Welcome.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Well, what's your relationship with Renko after all these years?
Well, right now I worry about him. I don't know how many times this man can be hit over the head and bounce back. You know, he's a great lot of fun to work with because he's smart and he's methodical. He's interesting, you know, even in sort of an everyday experiences, when I run into something that's sort of a difficult thing, I say, what would Arkady do?
He's also pretty cynical, though.
Yeah, he is, but, I'm having it both ways. The women that he meets find him romantic, and he's just being melancholy, but there is an interesting sort of chemical reaction there.
This book was at least inspired to some extent by an actual murder of a journalist. I mean, I should say, without giving away a lot of the plot, it involves a suicide, supposed suicide, of a journalist who is kind of on the trail of a lot of the Russian mob and all of that. But I think you were inspired, weren't you, by the case of Anna Politkovskaya?
Yes. Thank you for saying that. I trip over it from time to time. But she was a magnetic figure. She was a fascinating figure of enormous courage, and practically a saint to many Russians. Although she did not find herself to be very saintly, she was a very down to earth, interesting, passionate woman, and her murder was sort of swept under the rug, and somebody has been caught and charged with it, but it's a dubious indictment, you could say. So I just felt that this was somebody who could not be ignored. I refused to let her be ignored. This is the power of journalists and novelists. You pass the word along.
But here we have, and by the way, I should say that my guest is also the recipient of two Hammett Prizes and a Golden Dagger Award, you know, one of our most respected writers of mysteries, thrillers, suspense-type novels, all set over in Russia. Still hasn't picked up that language, though.
No. And occasionally, not occasionally, a Russian will come up and slap me in the back and say something, and I generally agree.
Stratsvoy, dobre utro. But the difference, I mean, you get into this whole coded notebook, and, I mean, there's a lot of plot development here in terms of just your imagination going off. So when I say it's based on her story, it's maybe inspired by.
I'd say inspired by. It's not her story. She wrote much of her own story. She didn't need any help from me.
Were there tapes with her that you know of? Or
yeah.
Tapes play a central role here.
Yeah. And she was gutsy beyond belief. She would go into Chechnya repeatedly and where she was targeted by both Russians and Chechens. It didn't stop her.
Yeah, she's an amazing character, and this is kind of a tribute to her in many ways, but your research always kind of knocks me for a loop. I mean, all that you learn about the Russian mafia, this character Gregor Grigorenko, who dies or is assassinated pretty much in short order when her suicide takes place, and we got to connect the dots here. Nobody but Renko really is, even his partner isn't necessarily all that hip to
it. But, you know, all that research is fun. You know, that's the fun part. Is collecting all the, amassing all this information, winnowing it down to, you know, what you can actually use. But, you know, if you can't use something, you can use its shadow.
And did you do a lot of exploring into Kaliningrad, the secret
city? Oh, yeah,
city?
I went to Kaliningrad. What a town.
It's an enclave. We should say it's sort of on the
separated
Baltic.
It's separated from the rest of Russia.
So it's had more mobs. More mob activities.
Yeah, and it's always been corrupt. It's always been sort of it was a secret city. It was a closed city for many years, and of course it was a kind of a phony city in some ways, in that Stalin took the entire population of Kaliningrad, which was a German population, and so during the war he moved them out entirely, and replaced them with a Russian population. So it's sort of an orphaned city.
What about the way your books have been received in Russia? I know you've had some hard time there. You're on a KGB list, high security list back in the late 80s, and they always put you through a hassle every time you go there. But better reception and better treatment now?
Well, now that it used to be that if you had a copy of Gorky Park, you'd go to jail. You're caught with it. That was two years in jail for reading a book of mine. Now my books are published there, and they're too busy making money to worry about me.
We're talking to Martin Cruz Smith, and his newest novel is Tatiana. And you've gone public with the fact that this novel was written with Parkinson's, and you've kind of kept it secret since about 1995. But the story that's so compelling to me is how this book dedicated to M, your wife, really involved her in a major way.
Well, she's been the first person to read my prose since we were in college together, back in the 60s, and so she knows what I do, and she knows what I'm, you know, and she knows she doesn't necessarily expect what I'm going to come up with, but she knows if I've come up with it before. You know, I have on occasion written a scene and say, boy, that was an easy scene to write. That was smooth. And Em would say, well, yeah, because you wrote the same scene, you know, two books back.
Huh.
So I do not get away with anything. But she went beyond that with Tatiana. She wrote what I dictated. She typed what I dictated. And That's the idea of doing that for somebody else just is incomprehensible to me. But she stepped in, and when I could no longer type the quick brown fox jumped over the lazy dog without a dozen errors, suddenly she was there, and she just sort of slipped into that seat. And it's fairly miraculous.
And loving.
And loving. Yeah. Absolutely an act of love.
And the book appropriately is dedicated to her. And,
well, if you notice, they're all dedicated to her.
I know, but this one. why wait all this time to go public with Parkinson's?
Well, I didn't want to. You know, I didn't want to be thought of as. For a while, I didn't. You know, I didn't want to be.
Branded
and branded an Indian writer for a while. Simply because I didn't feel like being trading in that, and it wasn't. Although I'd done a number of books about the American Indian, I didn't. It wasn't my background. It wasn't my material. And then when I came up with is Parkinson's my material? No, God forbid. Until Parkinson's finally has you by a headlock, and then you have to confront it. I did not want to be, however, somebody like Martin Cruz Smith, our preeminent Parkinson's writer. I wanted to be who I felt I was without any preamble. But M sat in for me. Here, by the way, I owe a thanks to the New Yorker magazine, because in between my coming up with something to write, which in dictates, she read, she's been working her way down through a sack of New Yorkers that goes back about 10 years.
Are you Native American? I wasn't aware.
Yeah, Pueblo.
Oh, okay. Well, the Native American Parkinson's writer. No,
that's preeminent.
The preeminent. Let's talk a little bit about, though, what you've done with, I mean, some of the new technology, for example. You have what's described as advanced Parkinson's, and there's been a lot of brain stimulation, and there's been electrical impulse work that you've undergone, and some of this has been pretty promising.
Well, I found it damn promising, not only promising, but a promise delivered. I was, of course, appalled the first time I'd heard about it, because it has sort of Frankensteinian kind of remedy in which you end up, you imagine kind of bolts and nuts sticking out of your head. What you've got, in fact, is a sort of a regulator, a pacemaker of sorts implanted in your chest, wires that go to your...
It's just like a pacemaker, really.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah. And so it regulates the... production of levodopa, which is in short supply, but it comes in spasmodically and uncontrolled, and you end up with tremors. So you've got this wire that leads down to deep inside the brain, as they say. It's deep brain. And it regulates that, and suddenly, and I wish your listeners could see at this point, you go from shaking to absolutely still the second it's turned on. And some people say, well, it's just for tremor. Well, it's not just for tremor, because that tremor becomes your life. And it's like being freed from jail to have that tremor gone.
I'm going to invite those of you listening to join us. It's a half-hour segment, so if you have something you'd like to contribute to the conversation here, or if you have a question for our guest, Martin Cruz Smith, response perhaps to novels that you've read of his, or the film that was made of Gorky Park, or whatever, we welcome your involvement in the program. Our toll-free number is available to you right now. It's 866-733-6786, so feel free to join us. Again, toll-free, 866-733-6786. Number of other ways to join us. You can email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments right onto our website, which is kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. And the usual array, Bill, of characters here. I alluded to Sergeant Orlov before, and got Jenya, this 17-year-old chess player, and an orphan street kid who wants to join the Army. I found myself particularly interested, and I have to ask you about Maxim the poet, because he's kind of a humorous character in some ways.
Yes, right? Yes. Well, they all are. For me, the books are, to a good degree, fun to write, because they are acerbic characters with a lot of dark humor. And
Russian humor, really.
Russian humor.
Yeah.
I did a piece for the Wall Street Journal yesterday about five books, and it talked about five books that were examples of Russian humor. And there's nothing as funny and as dark as a Russian comedy, from Gogol onto Zoschenko. It's just they are the masters, when I have a character who can sort of be like theirs at all, I'm quite perversely proud of that.
Chekhov too. And Turgenev. There's just a lot of mordant humor in Gogol. Admittedly, is the master, but in Russian writers,
you've
steeped yourself in Russian writers, have you? Through the years,
I've tried to, but everybody had to, says, well, I finally finished Tolstoy. I finally finished War and Peace, and I'm reading Zoschenko and Voinovich. reading not lesser writers necessarily, but characters that are full of a certain Russian-ness that is very appealing.
Let me bring our callers on, and we begin with Jasmine. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
You're welcome. Join us, please.
I just had a quick question. I'm fascinated by all the subject matter, but do I need to start from the beginning, or could I start with Tatiana?
Oh, you could start anywhere you want.
And it will make sense, and I'll get the references.
Yeah. There is an added satisfaction to coming up with, because there are connections and sort of story arcs, I guess you could call them, that span books. And there's some that you will say, six books on, you'll say, aha, that's why this happened back then. But that's a bonus.
So do start from the beginning if I can.
Yeah, if you can, but not to worry.
You can read them separately, though. I think that's the major point. And thank you, Jasmine, for the call. We've got another listener named Valerie. Good morning.
Good morning. Say, I'd like to know what you personally think of Vladimir Putin, and what do the people that you see in Russia, and I've been to Kaliningrad as well, what do they think of Mr. Putin?
Well, it depends on, it's a very much an age differential there. People in their 30s have a much different regard from people who have a memory that goes back to the fact that Putin was a KGB colonel, and still is in many estimations, and he's in power now. But I think we better say he's going to be in power for quite a long time, and he's a smart Berlusconi. Let's put it that way.
That's a fascinating way to describe him, actually. And, never thought of that. A lot of people can't get the picture of him out of their mind, flexing his muscles and
yes.
Naked from the waist up and all. He's also kind of a fascinating character, because when you think about Russia post-Cold War kind of going down in power, except for maybe petroleum, which you get into somewhat in this novel, sense that, suddenly – If you believe Putin, you think they're a major player on the world stage still. And to some extent, that's how he comports himself.
Well, if you're outside of Moscow or outside of St. Petersburg, then you're in Russia.
Russia.
That's what people say. They say Moscow, there's St. Petersburg, and then there's Russia.
Let me go to Neil next. Neil, join us.
Yeah, about those movie versions of your books, how come there were never any other movie versions made of any of your novels? Did the first one do that badly, or what? Are there any plans? And what would you think of Michael Douglas as Renko?
Well, I wasn't that crazy about the movie, but it wasn't that bad. It was like a minor accident. It was like a fender bender on the highway. But in terms of there being another movie, I think we may see something coming out of something like the BBC, that kind of series. In other words, we are negotiating now. We're negotiating now, and I dare not say too much, because I always have the feeling that when it comes to this kind of negotiation, just a little puff knocks the paper boat over and.
If I can hazard a strange impulse here,
yes.
You know who comes to my mind almost when I think about who might play Renko, as strange as this may sound? Robin Williams, because he's done really good work with Russian accents and the like, and he can be a serious
actor.
Yeah,
and I could see him. He's bad. He did Moscow and the Hudson. He was wonderful.
That's exactly what I was thinking of, Moscow and the Hudson, yeah.
But I think that I don't see him being Renko without suddenly launching into some yabba-dabba-doo kind of, I think he's a wonderful, wonderful comedian.
But he's also a very good serious actor.
And he is.
Would you see as Renko then?
You know what I see? I see an unknown Russian actor.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think you can do this without doing it. You know, Michael Fassbender would be wonderful. But with the little, the two caveats that he's not available.
Minor caveat.
And the other one is that he's not Russian. I would love to see. But then, I paint myself into a corner in this kind of thing. I did a book I'm very fond of called Rose.
Yeah.
And that demands a wonderful British actor, so actress.
Question you're often asked, I'm sure. Bob wants to know, why did Mr. Smith become interested in Russia?
Well, I had a very – when I was back in 1972, I guess it was, I went to Russia in pursuit of a very trivial idea, which was to do a book about an American detective who goes to Moscow and shows the Russians how to really be a good investigator. And I spent some time in Moscow and St. Petersburg, and I realized that there was a really decent, good, fascinating story to be done about Russians in Russia. You know, I didn't need to traipse in the door with another American hero, but you know, you could. The problem was that it demanded a lot more information than I had, a lot more skill than I had. But I embarked on it. I sold it to a publisher. I came back with a different story, one with it really was Russian. He was appalled, of course, because he said, "How can you can't do this? You're not good enough to do this." And then I demanded to buy the book back, and he wouldn't sell it to me, and I wouldn't give him any more pages, which was a sort of a classic publishing standoff.
It sounds like a standoff indeed. We're talking to Martin Cruz Smith, who is the author of his newest novel, Tatiana. And Nancy writes, did you try voice recognition software? I use it often. It's not perfect, but it's good. My father had Parkinson's, so I know about the soft voice and problems enunciating. But the software can be trained to one's speaking pattern. Listening to Smith, I think it would work. Did he try it?
I tried different versions of it.
Yeah.
And it didn't work for me. Let me put it that way. I'm sure it works for many people. It would write out the most amazing things in different languages, and I know I hadn't said things I hadn't said, so I gave up on that. And thank God I came upon someone closer to home.
Well, she wants to add here that she thinks it's important for listeners who have similar limits to know there are options other than a devoted spouse.
Well, let me talk about the devoted spouse for a second. Because what I also had, and it's implicit, is that I had an incredible support system of a family that had infinite patience, and that's perhaps more important as important as the system you use.
And Debbie tweets, really appreciated the story in today's New York Times about your Parkinson's, which my brother has had just as long. All the best to you. And Jim writes, I was fascinated by your book on Chernobyl, Wolves Eat Dogs. The idea that there were people continuing to live in the dangerous radiation areas surrounding the plant was new for me. Do you have any updates on these people or the areas? And by the way, I also like your books on Cuba, and I'd like to see more.
I'd like to hear more from this reader. But lately they're becoming more and more bold about declaring that there really wasn't that much effect of radiation. And I think it's if you're willing to buy that, then you can buy any number of bridges.
The new novel by Martin Cruz Smith, Tatiana. Bill, good to have you with us. Thank you so much for being with us.
My great pleasure.
And we're coming up on another segment. Larry Bensky's going to join us, and we're going to shift gears from Russia to France, and to America, too. We're going to talk about Proust when we return on Forum. I'm Michael Krasny.